Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. Chris, how you doing this week? Did you enjoy your time at the football game? Actually, some nice weather this past weekend.
Oh, man, it was a beautiful day in Happy Valley, Jim. So that was great, especially because we, like I think a lot of folks around Pennsylvania and probably up and down the eastern seaboard, have been getting a lot of rain. Although I think about the situation of the folks down in the North Carolina area, and I can't complain too much, no matter what the weather is here. So we're thinking about them. But yeah, great, great early autumn Saturday in Happy Valley. The game itself, maybe a little underwhelming, frankly, but when you look around the rest of college football, not to sound too much like our head coach, but it's hard to feel too bad. We didn't have to escape with a win, and we did not get upset. So you just keep stacking those W's. Good stuff.
It's win and survive now, Chris.
It really is. That's all it is. It really is. You know, I've been saying on my radio show this week, Jim, that precedes this program. So probably people just heard me live. Now they're hearing me tape delayed. But I said, we don't know or when or if the parity era is going to hit college football. Well, we should certainly recognize there's a possibility that with the institution of NIL plus the transfer portal, the talent level is going to flatten out in a way that we've never really seen in the sport. And I do think we're starting to get some indications that not only is it heading in that direction, but the parity era is here. It's here right now. The transition happened during an off season, whether it was this summer or last summer, and we didn't even know it, but we are into college football's parity era. That may be the case. Or it could just be that this is 2007 and the world is upside down.
Well, I do want to talk to you more about that. As most of our listeners know, I missed the game this weekend. I was at a wedding. I spent all last week, or the last couple of weeks, complaining about it. Got to fess up, though, Chris. I had a great time. It was an outdoor wedding. Weather was gorgeous. I had to drive to Connecticut, which is a whole nother story, but it was fine. The weather was great. Great facility, great place. So this is on Saturday. And if you know I'm a Mets fan, between Penn State playing, the Mets playing, that was in Met territory. Met a lot of Penn State fans, a lot of Met fans. During the reception, a lot of people around the phone watching the Mets and your Phillies play, which was pretty exciting on Saturday for the Mets.
Yeah, well,
fans.
I was happy to switch over to Alabama Vandy, Jim. Thanks so much to the Commodores for granting me that relief.
Yes, they stunning game there, and there were several of those. And I'm giving a shout-out again. I bumped into a listener of our show. I met her a couple years ago at another wedding, told her what we do here. Her husband's a big Penn Stater. She downloads the app. She is now a regular listener of the podcast. She said because her name's Annie. She listens to this to keep up with Penn State for her husband, Vince, so she could keep up with Penn State. She came up, told me she hears us all the time. So they live in Raleigh, North Carolina. So she may be driving back right now listening to this show. Just say, hey, nice shout out to them. And I spoke to a lot of Penn State people out there. Chris had a lot of fun with that also. It's not the same as being at the game itself, but it was enjoyable. So let's hit the game itself. And as I said, you win, survive now, win in advance. But we are seeing a few things with Penn State games that are consistent. And the first thing being a slow start.
Yeah.
How come, Chris?
I wish I knew, but this has become a multi-season trend, right? Now, the last time we were this conspicuously a second-half team, all we did was win the Big Ten and have probably the best, most memorable season we've had under James Franklin. So if this is what it takes, I'm all aboard. But I really thought I bit the pavement on my prediction this week, Jim, because I really thought coming out of last week's win, this team was ready to seize momentum against the UCLA team whose bodies were still adjusted to Pacific Coast time. They did not get into Happy Valley until around 4 or 5 p.m. local. So that was, as for all intents and purposes, a 9 a.m. kickoff for those kids. And I thought, this is not a good team. Penn State has momentum. They are playing well on both sides of the ball. This is a chance for them to just put it all together and put away a team they are much better than early, so that they can just relax in the second half and start emptying the depth chart a little bit. This is a chance to get healthy and get rested and have ahead of having to go across the country. And no, instead, they just went out there and sleepwalked through another football game. Now, look, it's maybe something to not complain too loudly about, that you can have a team that can just go out there and mess around for three quarters and win as convincingly as they did on Saturday. But it was a little frustrating to watch when you felt like it was there for them to just take hold of and control the game, and they didn't really do that. But I mean, again, I get the context of the college football Saturday we had. It sounds foolish to complain about that sort of thing, but if you continue to have these lackadaisical starts, it is eventually going to come back to bite you.
And I almost feel like that is it, Chris. It's just lackadaisical, because one of the things that happened in this game that struck me was the last drive of the first half, where it was, hey, we've got 2.5 minutes, guys. How about we go score? And they played it very differently. If you notice, that became a Drew Aller drive. Instead of the conservative, we're going to run the ball.
Yeah.
He started launching it downfield. He gained some rhythm.
Yep.
And he just sliced and diced the UCLA defense. And it was as if, okay, guys, now we got to start getting serious here.
Yeah. You know, Jim, you and I, probably foolishly, if I'm being honest, try to draw analogies between what we see in the high-level sports we talk about and our own experiences of having played in a much less prestigious level or environment. But, you know, there is one thing I will say. I will be confused by no one for God's gift to human athleticism, okay? And so I was always impressed by people I knew and I got to play alongside with who had a lot of natural talent. And one of the things I would always marvel at is the way these guys who were really, really good knew when they could just go out there and basically goof off and still dominate the competition, and still were then able to just flip a switch when they needed to. So this is a really good team. I think it's arguably the, I don't know if I want to say the best, but I think it is without too much, I don't think I get too much pushback to say this is the deepest team of the James Franklin era, in terms of when you go down the depth chart and you have to bring in some of the depth guys, as we've unfortunately seen because of the way some of the starters have been banged up over the course of the first five games, you still have a really good football player that's ready to step in without too much drop off, even when you're getting into some of the true freshmen and redshirt freshmen who are being pressed into service. And so I it may be the case that what you see from week to week, you know, we say if you come out and you have a bad start against a better opponent, it's going to bite you. Well, maybe they won't have a bad start against a better opponent because maybe they have that ability. I really did get the sense as the game rolled along on Saturday that they just sort of understood, hey, guys, we can just goof off out here and still win by two or three scores. And so maybe they don't vocalize it, but mentally they know it, and it's just reflected in the body language, the way they play. And you brought up Drew Aller getting into a rhythm. I don't know that the coaching staff, at least on the offensive side of the ball, and this really goes to Andy Kotelnicki, did the offense a lot of favors with the play calling, because I think they consistently prevented Drew from having the opportunity to get into a rhythm. And I think that was a factor as well.
And that's part of, you know, where the question is, do the coaches go into this game? Now, they're not going to say it out loud, oh, this is only UCLA, guys. We'll just throw the ball out there and I'm sure we'll win. But it doesn't feel like they work to get Drew Aller in the rhythm, or they're going to run the plays to be creative. They don't put an emphasis on that first drive. This is going to be important. As I said, it felt like with 2.5 minutes to go when they came out for that drive. And we've seen this before, right before halftime, where it seems like, okay, guys, we don't have forever. We can't just march methodically down the field with a 16-play drive. We need to get it down and get it there quickly. And it happens, like you said, it's like that great athlete who could just flip the switch. Whereas early in the game, Drew Aller, he was off a little bit early. And it's funny to say, and I've done this a couple times. Last week I even said it. And he's completing over 70% of his passes, Chris. But I'm still saying, he was off for a little bit. But that was stopping drives. And it's as simple as they started the game 0-for-2 on third down conversions. They then converted their next 6 third down opportunities.
Yeah, and another thing you have to note, look, assuming it's true what James Franklin said in his post-game press conference, and it's tough, frankly, after the way they handle injuries in general, and especially this past week with Nick Singleton's status, to believe anything. But if it's true that they didn't know until right before kickoff that Singleton was not ready to go, maybe that really threw a monkey wrench into what they were doing with their game plan, and so they had to adjust on the fly, and that took the staff a little bit of time to figure out how they were going to handle a situation where they didn't have that 1-2 punch, which clearly the offense is very different without that ability to alternate between what Catron Allen brings to the table and what Nick Singleton brings. So that's a factor as well, potentially.
Well, bringing up the Nick Singleton factor, who didn't play, no doubt that was a factor. The other thing is, Tyler Warren in the box score. What do you have? How many catches did he have, Chris?
Catches? I want to say he had 2, maybe. I'm just going off the top of my head.
He had 3. Okay. So I'm not sure how big a factor he was when we, you know, if you would say fully healthy, Tyler Warren caught 3 balls for a total of 29 yards, and Nick Singleton, you know, obviously didn't play. Those are 2 of your huge weapons.
Yeah, I thought it was strange they didn't target Warren more because he's maybe their best player on offense, honestly. And I felt like there were opportunities to get him involved, and they just couldn't do it. There was just not a play-calling rhythm. The whole game, Jim, just felt very lackadaisical is the word, very herky-jerky. And you know, and still, like, the defense,
it was
the
never in defense doubt.
Gave up 3 points. Yeah.
Yeah, it was never in doubt. Yeah, UCLA scores their touchdown at junk time. Yeah, I don't even want to count that, you know. But all right, Chris, I want to ask you about a few individual players. We're going to do that when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA. Award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. It's quarter number 2 of our program. Just a quick reminder, coming up on Whiteout Weekend, Friday night, Happy Valley United is sponsoring a whiteout party at the Nittany Lion Inn. Sounds like a lot of fun. This is going to be from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. So if you're in for the weekend for the great whiteout game, check out the whiteout party night before, Nittany Lion Inn. There's going to be live music, dancing, food, and Chris, an open bar.
Okay, you almost lost me at dancing, Jim, but you reeled me back in.
I thought that would do it. Smart. Same here. Open bar, that does it for me too. There's going to be several Penn State lettermen also attending that you can mingle with. Sounds like a great time. If you want some more information, check out happyvalleyunited.com. A lot more information about the event and you could get your tickets there. All right, Chris, let's get back to Penn State UCLA, a 27-11 game. And it seems like this is becoming the type of game we're getting from Penn State. We're not getting those huge blowouts, but the game is never in doubt. You never felt unsafe in this game. Want to talk about some individuals. This was Katron Allen's game. Nick Singleton is out. But I thought we saw what Katron Allen is about. You could give him the ball. He's going to give you a great effort every time. You're just not going to get those 30 and 40-yard runs like you would from Nick Singleton.
Yeah, that's just not Katron's game, and I think people understand that. I think the opportunity to get him downfield, maybe as a receiver, could have been utilized a little bit more. I think he's deceptively good in that regard. But yeah, I don't want to take anything away from Katron's performance on Saturday, which again seems like he found out on very short notice that he was going to have to be the focal point of the rushing offense. And, you know, I think, you know, UCLA probably figured that out very quickly as well and adjusted. And nevertheless, he did what he did. I mean, so often you see that guy with his patience and his footwork able to just wait the half second you need to take to find a little bit of space and make the most out of it. And then the fact that he can then run with power and break tackles down the line, he can take plays that look like, if you're lucky, will gain you 1 or 2 yards, and he can turn them into 6 or 7. He really is a special talent and a unique talent, but you lose something when you're not able to make him the complement to everything that Nick Singleton brings to the table. And Quentin Martin, I thought, showed some nice flashes of who he's going to be as a player. But to me, he also looked like a true freshman with a lot to learn.
Chris, the only thing that you say that is disconcerting to me, and you mentioned it earlier about the game plan and Katron Allen not knowing until game time that they may not have Nick Singleton.
And again, I don't even know if I buy that. I'm just being honest. Like, I feel like so jerked around by this, by the way they deal with injuries, that it's hard to really take anything they say all that seriously.
Well, that's it, because on Wednesday, media found out Nick Singleton wasn't practicing. They asked a little legitimate question of James Franklin, and he's always got to be coy and toy with people with the answer when questions like that are asked. So either say he's fine, you know, he's missing practice because he has a conflict with class, something like that. Or why does he have to play the games that he does?
Yeah, I don't love it. I don't mind them not disclosing injury information they don't have to disclose. We might be moving in that direction. You know, the NFL requires its teams to do it, and this is, especially in the Big Ten and the SEC, becoming more and more of a professional enterprise, and legal gambling factors into all that in ways I don't even fully understand, but it's certainly a concern on the table, I promise you. I do believe the SEC is now kind of formalizing its injury report process. So this is in the offing. Right now, you don't have to give it up. James thinks it gives you a small strategic advantage that you'd be a fool not to take. You should take every edge you can get. I respect that. I just think there's a way to communicate with the press and therefore the fan base who's interested in this stuff, and you want them to be interested because that means they care and they're engaged. I just think there's a better way to do it, a smarter way to do it that doesn't take a nothing situation and turn it into a news story that then distracts from what you want people to be talking about, which is that you're ranked in the top 10 and you're hosting a big game in your home stadium. I it's not a big deal. It's an irritant to me and a lot of other people, and I just don't understand why they don't choose a smarter, less irritating approach that's not intentionally provocative and antagonistic towards the people who are your most loyal customers. I don't know. It's just strange to me.
That's my feeling on it too. But perhaps more importantly, the point where you say, well, they didn't know till game time how to game plan. If he's already saying to the media on Wednesday, the provocative, it's not an issue yet, or however he put it, He had to know then. So there should be no excuse for having a game plan issue if you knew Wednesday that Nick Singleton was in doubt for Saturday's game.
Watch this. Nick is questionable this week. Frankly, I just don't know if we're going to have him on Saturday, but we'll probably not be able to update you until game day morning. Now there, I gave you an answer that is not disrespectful. It doesn't like put my finger in your eye for no reason whatsoever. It dignifies the fan interest, and it doesn't tell UCLA anything they weren't going to be able to intuit from all the cloak and dagger stuff they did instead over the 3 days leading up to the game. And the point I made on Twitter, which apparently infuriated some people in a way that, like, much more what, in my opinion, were provocative things I've said on there haven't, is that if you need to do all that, if you need to play games with whether or not Nick Singleton's going to play against UCLA in order to win, then just like forfeit at least four of the games left on the schedule. And clearly they didn't need them. Clearly they didn't need them to win. So I don't know. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill. It's just one of those things where I think sometimes James gets stubborn in ways that are self-destructive to his own best interests. Like, I think now he feels like if he starts giving more information or more clarity on injuries, it's like he let his critics win. And that's a mentality that I think he could help himself tremendously if he would just let go of. Because it's not true. Smart leaders take in new information and change when the situation calls for it. So I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Well, your point you made, the way you handle it, hey, and I've heard he's nicked up. I've heard he's under the weather. Okay. Either way, regardless, if he would have answered like you said, hey, we're just not sure. It'll probably be until game time we know for sure for him for the UCLA game. Boom. But my point was more about the team itself should know exactly what his status is.
Right.
And if his status is questionable, you should not have an issue game planning. If I know on Wednesday his status is questionable.
Yeah, that's right. Fair.
I will say
from just one final thing on that topic. I do think if it was just a marginal situation, whether it's a physical injury or an illness, I think it's probably smart to be careful with them against an opponent like UCLA, because you correctly presume you can win without them and you're going to need them down the stretch here. We got some really tough games coming up on this schedule, which is great. I'm excited about it, but you want as healthy a Nick Singleton as you can get. UCLA is exactly the kind of game where you want to be extra cautious with a talent like that.
Exactly, Chris. And I think I would have to share the load a little bit in a different way than the Nick Singleton, Catron Allen split is the two other players that you have who could carry the ball are Bo Prabula and Tyler Warren. I think this would have been a great opportunity to use those packages more, change a pace so it's not Catron Allen every time. Tyler Warren and Bo Prabula are each different style runners and are running from a different position at quarterback. I thought it would have been a nice opportunity to see more of those two guys running the ball.
Yeah, I guess the question is, if you feel like, you know, you can win without doing that, both of those guys are guys I don't know that I love subjecting to more abuse on their bodies that you take running the ball. But it's a fair point. I was actually glad to see Martin get some opportunities, because one thing we haven't talked a whole lot about, I think, anywhere in coverage of the football team this year, is that we are a little thin depth-wise at tailback between those two top guys. So if you are without one of them, man, all of a sudden you've got very young kids stepping into the fold. So I thought it was nice to give Martin some snaps just so he could get that experience.
I thought so also. And I'm throwing out every other name out there, Tyler Warren, Bo Prabula. I actually would have liked to have seen Quentin Martin with more carries than he got.
Yeah.
You know, I know they threw him the ball a couple times. I know he got one carry. I would have liked to have seen him get a few more carries, Chris.
You see it on both sides of the ball, and this is not unique to Penn State's staff. James Franklin and his assistants are most comfortable with the guys they know who have had a lot of experience and logged a lot of reps, and so the bias is always going to go in favor of the guys with the long track record.
Yes, and you can't really argue with that. I get it, and here I am nitpicking in a game where we're saying, hey, you know what? Things could have been a whole lot worse. If you're from Missouri, Tennessee, Alabama, you know exactly what we're talking about. Things could have been a whole lot worse. All right, Chris, as we wrap up this segment, I want you to get ready for next segment. What I want to start with, I want to talk Liam Clifford with you.
Yeah, need to, for sure.
Remember, before the season started, we got the quote from James Franklin. Again, maybe this is on us. We hang on every quote when he talked about Trey Wallace and Liam Clifford separating themselves and, you know, being those lead guys. And it's through the first third of the season, we're saying, okay, where's Liam Clifford? We've just not seen it. He hasn't been targeted. Well, finally, we're going to start next segment, Chris, with the question, was this Liam Clifford's coming out party? You got the break to think about it. When we come back, you get to answer that very question.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing. Built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. It's quarter number three of our show. Chris, I wrapped up quarter number two, giving you the preview of quarter three. Liam Clifford, three receptions, 107 yards. Big game for him. Was this his coming out party?
Yeah, not just a big game, Jim, but really big decisive plays in that game. You know, games yes. that set up scores, that kept drives alive, and ones in which it was really incumbent upon him to be able to get position against the coverage and then to make some nice catches, and he did. In terms of the question of is this his coming out party, I do think you've seen signs from him earlier in the season, and kind of with any one specific playmaker, take your pick on the offense in the receiving game, where people would say, why isn't blank producing more? You kept coming back to the fact that we weren't attempting that many passes. And again, whether it's Trey Wallace or Tyler Warren or Amari Evans, I do like this approach of we're going to keep going with what's working until it stops working. And so if we're finding Tyler Warren again and again versus Bowling Green, we're going to force the ball to Julian Fleming or Liam Clifford because we want the fans on the message boards to feel better about our receiver depth. At the end of the day, they care about what we care about, which is ticks in the W column. So do I think this is a signal that all of a sudden Liam's going to be the number one guy or that he's going to be a volume receiver from week to week? I don't think so. I think this group just doesn't have a superstar, but it's got solid players and it's got a lot of different options. It can score on you in multiple different ways, which in some ways to me is maybe even preferable than if you're a one-trick pony. Now, ideally, you want to be like Ohio State with a Jeremiah Smith or Alabama with a Ryan Williams, where you've got great talent and then one transcendent player. That's the best case scenario. But the fact that I could only think of two to name shows you that they're the exceptions that prove the rule. So I do think what we learned is not necessarily, hey, expect a lot from Liam Clifford every week. What we learned is that Drew Aller has confidence going to Liam when the what the defense is giving Penn State dictates it, and that we can feel pretty good about his ability to make plays when called upon. I've really, like, if since we've recruited him, I've liked the combination of skills he brings to the table as a complementary piece in the offense. And now as somebody who's been with the program for a few years and had a chance to see how it worked from the inside out even before he got here because of his brother, I feel good about what you heard in the offseason about his evolution as, you know, a locker room guy, team leader, somebody who was really picking up and appreciating the small stuff and doing those little details better. And, you know, Joe always used to say, take care of the little things, the big things take care of themselves. That's an encouraging positive to take out of the UCLA game for sure.
Well, a couple thoughts on that, Chris. There aren't enough passes to go around. There's not enough targets. I saw, and I wish I had the number in front of me, Kyle McCord the other day for Syracuse. I think he threw like 50 or 60 passes in one game. And if I'm not mistaken, just off the top of my head, Drew Aller threw 24 passes. This may be right. The most he's thrown in one game. I mean, I think you could take three of Drew Aller's games and put it up against that one game from Kyle McCord. So I think that's part of the issue with the receivers. There's just not enough balls, not enough opportunities. Now,
here's the thing, just one other point to go along with that. Nick Singleton and Catron Allen are two of the best players in the Big Ten. And by and large, the conference, especially with the addition of the four Pac-12 teams, is still built to stop passing-oriented offenses. So if you can run a power run-based offense, again, if it's working, don't go away from it. So not only are there not enough passing attempts to go around, a lot of your offensive snaps are going to be on the ground. And if you can keep moving the ball with that, that is a great thing. So don't go away from it.
No, and the other thing, and I need to look into it closer, is just the style Penn State's playing on offense with the long drives, again, that shortens the game as far as number of possessions. And I think we're not seeing those crazy quick three and outs from the Penn State defense forcing that. So I want to check the number of possessions. It doesn't feel like Penn State's getting a lot of possessions either. So that's adding to this whole where the numbers come out to. The other point I wanted to make about this game for Liam Clifford is I'm not sure it's always just on him or on the receiver how well they do. I think sometimes, and you kind of hit on this, is does the quarterback have the confidence in a player and does he look for him?
Yeah.
So, you know, in Bowling Green, I'm not sure it was always that Tyler Warren was just the only guy getting open. It's just, hey, once you start going to him and it's working and connecting, if you're the quarterback, where are you going to keep looking? So, you know, I think that that's part of the equation also. So now with some success, maybe Liam Clifford just becomes a target in Drew Aller's eyes.
Yeah, I think back to the Illinois game last year, where very similarly to once or twice on Saturday, Penn State really needed a play. We really needed to not just to stay on the field on offense, but open things up a little bit more. And, you know, if you recall, it was the end of the first half, and we were in a slog against the Illini in Champaign. And Aller uncorks one, a deep ball that Liam had to make a really nice play on, and he did it to set up. I forget whether it was a touchdown or a field goal, but it was points, and it was points Penn State really needed just to feel good going into the locker room. Well, I felt like that was sort of the same thing on Saturday. Again, everything is just so sluggish and sleepy, and the game just kind of feels like it's dragging along, and you need a spark. And Clifford provided that for the team on Saturday. To your point, I think Drew is going to remember those. Those things stack, and that's going to increase his confidence level to trust and look for Liam, add him to the list of potential playmakers down the list. So that's good. I do want to say, when you're talking about Penn State not getting off the field on defense and allowing a lot of those clock-eating drives both directions, it was probably tough for Penn State to have to defend Justin Martin, the backup quarterback for UCLA, because they had no tape on him. And I thought he played pretty well.
I thought he played very well.
I'm not sure he shouldn't keep the job, whether Ethan Garbers gets healthy or not, because Garbers had not been playing well so far this year. He brings a little bit more dynamism to that offense. He's just a big kid. He's tough to bring down. Live arm. I thought they actually probably upgraded at quarterback as a result of the injury.
Well, if you look at the numbers from the starter, it certainly appears that way. I think they may have a permanent change there. You mentioned about last year's game. This is my attempt at doing a smooth segue.
Sure.
Ending up with either a touchdown or field goal, not sure. So I could say, oh, speaking of field goals, Chris,
mm-hmm.
2 for 2.
Yeah. Yeah, you and I talked about, are you kind of secretly hoping some drives might stall? And I thought about
yes.
that, and I thought, well, you know, here we are. Again, not the worst thing in the world, especially because they've made the switch to Ryan Barker. And interesting, I thought that Barker, the walk-on, actually was considered to be the guy with the inside edge between him and Chase Meyer, the Tulsa transfer, in terms of who was next man up. And you've been hearing that going all the way back to the summer, that he had just a little bit of an edge. It wasn't beautiful, but the ball got through the uprights, and that's beautiful enough to me, Jim.
That's all that you want. That's all you're looking for, which reminds me of our colleague who texted me during the game. I always ask Jeff Byers, Ironhead, for a bold prediction, and last week he said there are going to be 2 made field goals. So he was all excited and texted me. See, my bold prediction came true. All right. The other individual player I wanted to ask you about, how about Vega Ioane? We saw this from his Kansas days that Kotelniki will do this, where he puts a lineman out like a wide receiver and puts him in motion so he gets a running start for a block. Now, I just have to think a guy that size must think this is the greatest thing in the world. Now, we've seen this a couple times where he's been in motion and taken out smaller guys, but I think on Saturday was the first time it became a real thing with the Beaver Stadium crowd. I mean, it just got such a crazy reaction that you were at the game on television. They fully reacted to it also on TV.
Yeah, people were laughing. People were enjoying it. Again, I like that they're doing different things out of that same look so that it doesn't become predictable as the season goes on. But I don't know, I know it's not really apples to apples, but it just gives me the vibe of when they used to put Refrigerator Perry in the backfield on the 85 Bears.
Yes.
Just the optics of a big athlete who can move like Venga can and deliver that kind of punishment to whatever poor linebackers trying to come off the edge. It's fun. It's fun. And you want this to be fun.
And it's effective. You got the feeling Refrigerator Perry, that was about fun, you know?
Right.
This, it's effective. And you have to say to yourself, well, you know, congrats to Andy Kotelniki for thinking of doing it. And you could see how effective it is too, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah. Keeping on the offensive line, I do want to mention it's concerning. It looks like we may be without Anthony Donka this weekend and maybe for a while. And that is a huge loss because he was playing really, really well. I thought, Jim, he was rounding into form as one of the better offensive tackles in the conference, frankly. And if he is going to be out for a while, we're fortunate to have Todd Rucci there to back him up. And I thought he played pretty well. Todd Rucci, Nolan Rucci, Todd's
you can't,
dad.
You can't help yeah. yourself, can
yeah.
you?
Yeah, I'm old. What do you want? And Joe used to do that, right? Call the guys by their dad's names. That's a big loss. That's something that's going to be a concern for Penn State. And you hope maybe it's a situation where over the bye week, you could maybe get him for the stretch run of the season.
Yeah, hopefully. And this, you started out the show talking about the depth on Penn State. I think this is one of the examples that on the offensive line that you could get either Dad Rucci or Son Rucci, one of the Rucci's out there to play effectively when you do lose a tackle. So that speaks well of the depth of the team. All right, Chris, that is it for quarter number three. Quarter four, I want to look at the national picture a little bit with you because things went absolutely crazy on Saturday this week. We'll do that when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesdays, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Chris Buccanani. This is quarter number four. Just a reminder, whiteout party. Happy Valley United is sponsoring it. A whiteout party, whiteout weekend, the Friday night, November 8th, before the whiteout game versus Washington. This is at the newly renovated Nittany Lion Inn, Friday from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. So if you get in for the game that weekend on Friday, perfect opportunity Friday night. There'll be several Penn State lettermen there that you can mingle with. Live music, dancing, food. And, of course, everyone's favorite, an open bar. That's Friday, November 8th, whiteout party, day before the Penn State whiteout game with Washington. For tickets and more information, head over to happyvalleyunited.com. All right, Chris, I mentioned that we're going to talk national picture. But before we do, I just want to mention this. I don't know if you're a uniform guy at all or not. I love UCLA's uniforms.
Yes. Always. They're one of the nicer uniforms in college football. I think the gold face masks are a little bit too much. If they would go back to the gray, I think it would be a better look, but overall, beautiful uniform.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I agree with you on that point, but they're spectacular uniforms. Home or away, they are fantastic uniform. All right, Chris. Let's look at this national picture a little bit. It's fascinating, and if you're a Southeast Conference fan, you're probably saying, oh, this just proves the depth of the conference.
always. That's that. When there's an upset in the SEC, it's proof of how deep the SEC is.
No, I'm sorry. Here's what it proves. Yeah. It proves that your top teams are vulnerable.
Correct.
This is not Nick Saban's Alabama. Tennessee, who a lot of us, me, thought they were that team. I said all year, I thought there'd be somebody from that second tier of the Southeast Conference who would move up and be part of that Alabama, Georgia, Texas group.
Yeah.
It seemed to me like Tennessee was going to be that team.
I thought so too.
Maybe not. Arkansas knocks them out. Vanderbilt. And by the way, if you haven't seen it, Vanderbilt, they are a fun watch. I love their quarterback, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, it's hard not to. He's the definition of a gamer. And I do appreciate that he dropped an F-bomb live on ESPN after the game. Good for him.
Yes. I was just going to say, that's the other great thing. They had to bleep him out. Fantastic work by him. And I think we found out that Missouri is an absolute fraud.
I think that narrative had been building for a couple of weeks because of the way they had been playing. And the thing is, I was talking with Bill from For the Bloggy when he was in for homecoming 2 weeks ago. And we were talking about the Florida job. And would Lane Kiffin consider taking it? Are we in a new era where Ole Miss is not necessarily a worse job than the Florida job? And he made a really good point in that Florida is one of those places where when you win, you don't have to prove it. People just believe it because you're winning because it's Florida. And then there are programs, and I mentioned this connection because I do think Eli Drinkwitz is going to be up near the top of the list of candidates if Florida goes head coach searching. There are places like Ole Miss in Missouri where even if you're winning and you're winning at a high level, there's just built-in skepticism because of the brand. So if you slapped an Alabama logo on the Missouri helmets over the last few weeks, you would be enjoying more benefit of the doubt for the games that they had won close, right? But because you're Missouri, everyone's like, well, I'm going to be quick to doubt you. And then the minute you drop a game like that, it's like, oh, I knew it. They're frauds. But they might be frauds.
Well, and by the way, I'm going to bring up that same kind of argument when we talk about USC in a second.
Yeah.
But in the Southeast Conference, all of a sudden, you just changed the conversation about them. And by the way, Missouri, they lost. They dropped 12 places in the top 25. Alabama loses to Vanderbilt. They just dropped from 1 to 7. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Alabama has the credibility of having pulled off that win versus Georgia just last week, and sometimes you get those hangover losses. The voters were just waiting to punish Missouri. They were like, just give us a reason, please. And then you absolutely get run off the field versus Texas A&M. That's all the reason they needed to drop them. You brought up USC. I was really surprised they were unranked. I thought they would at least hang in there maybe at 24 or 25, but there's just too many other teams around the country that are winning. USC's at 2-2. That's a bad loss for them to take. So, you know, it really takes a lot of the luster off this week's game for Penn State, which is unfortunate from our perspective.
It is, but how do you look at this game now going into it from the USC perspective? Is this a USC team that's going to be wounded with their back to the wall and they'll come out fighting? Or is this a USC team that's just going to say, oh, geez, we don't have it this year?
Yeah. Look, Lincoln Riley's teams are not exactly renowned for their mental resiliency, right? So your experience and instinct would lead you to choose the latter. I do think it would. I've always thought this was a potential loss for Penn State. I think it still is. I think they are a dangerous opponent as a wounded animal. I will say this. All throughout the offseason and all throughout the regular season, I've been thinking, oh, I think this is going to be one of Penn State's losses. But now I see the way Minnesota just kind of dragged them into a knife fight in the trenches for four quarters. And I thought, okay, what's even worse than losing at USC? Oh, we can get the win at USC and then we'll just screw up and lose that Minnesota game later. And that'll be the loss that keeps us out of the playoffs. So if there's any reason for me to change my pick till I get to the end of the week to Penn State, it'll be that we're just deferring the suffering and misery to a point where it can be even more ridiculous and more painful than it would be if we lose in the Coliseum.
See, I had that same kind of theory, but I transferred it to Wisconsin on the road as being the loss.
Well, boy, they look different with their new quarterback, don't they? With the huge, huge caveat that it was against Purdue, who is just awful.
Awful, awful, awful team. Just looking now at the latest top 25 and looking at it, just for those who haven't seen it, Texas number one, Ohio State number two, Oregon three, Penn State four, interestingly enough, Penn State jumped Georgia, okay, with their Georgia has a loss. I didn't understand why they didn't drop further before. Miami number six, talk about a team that just escaped these last couple weeks. Between Virginia Tech and Cal, that's the next team I think I'm looking at for the big fall.
Yeah, although their schedule is pretty soft down the stretch. You do not get hit with a lot of haymakers playing in the ACC, so they may have escaped just enough to punch their ticket into the conference title game.
I should have looked at this before we got started, Chris. Does Miami play Clemson in the regular season, do you know?
I do not believe so, although I will tell you that I believe it is the first weekend of November when Penn State is playing Ohio State. I think that is Clemson versus Pitt, and suddenly that game is looming large in the fight for who will represent that conference in the playoffs, because you get into the ACC title game, Jim, you're four quarters away from a first-round bye.
which is amazing. And it also comes up with, Chris, they found their quarterback, didn't they? That is the difference on that team.
Yeah, no doubt.
And that makes all the difference in the world. But in the ACC, I'm thinking Clemson is now that team.
Yeah, they're really playing well. I liked this as a bounce back season for Clemson, and I think a lot of people just jumped right off the bandwagon because they got tattooed by Georgia in that opening game. But kind of the same thing I said about Colorado and the Big 12 after they lost to Nebraska. You lose one of those non-conference games, it's like, yeah, maybe that takes some of the luster off your season. Might hurt you if you're thinking about, you know, can we compete for a better bowl slot? I don't think the non-champion from the Big 12 is getting an at-large bid into the playoffs. But if you're going into a flawed conference, you just wipe the slate clean and you get a whole new crack at it. And to me, that was the deal with Clemson. They look really strong. Miami does not play Clemson in the regular season. So if they face off, it is going to be in the conference title game. I'm pulling up Clemson's remaining schedule now, Jim. And I'm looking for what are the potential tripwire points. They do have to play Louisville. They do have to play Pitt. And then they finish up with South Carolina, which is always tough. It is going to be in Death Valley. But, you know, you've got that rivalry game. So I think they've got a tougher road than Miami.
Remember when we thought Clemson and Florida State was going to be the game of the year in the ACC?
Yeah.
And just the other conference that you alluded to, it, the Big 12. What is there, like 23 different teams who could win that conference?
I love it. I love it. I love the fun. And by the way, going back to the ACC, do not sleep on SMU.
Oh, no.
They are lurking out there.
Take a look at their schedule, Chris. Do you have it in front of you, the ACC schedule? Take a look at SMU and who they have left to play.
Not a whole lot. I know that. I'm pulling it up right now. Well, it can be very decisive when they play Pitt.
Isn't that amazing that can be a huge game in the ACC?
Yeah, that's the November 2nd game for Pitt.
Okay.
Is they go against SMU. They've got Clemson November 16th. So the second half of their schedule is a murderer's row. They got Louisville and Boston College in there as well.
Chris, this all brings me back to that idea of the
Syracuse
point I've made.
Sorry.
Yeah. This 12-team playoff is, again, the greatest thing to happen to college football. That SMU-Pitt game. All right. SMU and Pitt, Chris, is now going to be a huge game.
With playoff implications. You're right. Yeah.
Yes. Which that is what makes this so great. And you have a week like we did here. And oh, by the way, Indiana 6-0 when they score over 40 points a game. But that's another discussion. But what you have here, Chris, is this past weekend, this was the worst schedule. The worst schedule in college football this season, and it turned out to be the most exciting weekend.
One of the best days. What a sport. There's nothing like it.
It is. This is why college football is the absolute best, Chris. All right, that is going to be it for our show. Thank you, Chris, and thank all of you for listening. Make sure that you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesdays, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.